Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome, welcome. The 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. It's Thursday, so Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee is here, and it is his birthday. Happy birthday, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Are you a birthday person?
As much as I have one every year.
That's what I kind of figured. Yeah. You're not like, it's my birthday week.
No. I have grammatical issues with that. Birthday. Day.
Day.
Since we start with birthday, like, what would be the best gift you could ever get on your birthday?
Time. And I don't know how you give that. Yes.
Oh, that's a good answer.
That is a good answer.
Deep answer. That's why he's so good, because he has deep answers to questions.
All right. Lots of big stories. Let's start with the police union arbitration, which started Monday. This is to determine the salaries of the department's sworn officers from 2023 to 2025. So it's a little looking backwards, and it doesn't seem like even with arbitration starting this week, it could be settled anytime soon. What do we know?
We know a lot. And the first thing is we both know a lot, and there's this black box now of arbitration.
Because this is closed to the media.
Yeah, and it's essentially, to some extent, close to the participants, too, in the sense that they're going to make their case to this arbitrator. And it's in the arbitrator's hands, then, how much the police are going to get paid. Now, stepping way backwards, the police are one of the few unions that's still recognized for collective bargaining because Act 10 exempted them. Then we flash forward to 2023. Act 12 included some more provisions that, I don't want to say they benefit the police, but they benefit public safety. They require spending on public safety. There's been this interpretation now that somehow that plays into this, that, you have to give the police a big raise because they get this. And the mayor has been very clear after delivering his budget address that, no, Act 12 calls for hiring a minimum number of people. It doesn't say you have to pay them this. But he was also very clear, I believe the police deserve a raise. Mm-hmm. It's gotten very ugly publicly. Part of that, I get the sense in having background and off-the-record conversations, is people know that the mayor is performing for one audience and the head of the police union is performing for his audience. And really, when they're actually in the room together, it might be a bit more diplomatic than you're seeing in public.
Oh, interesting.
But there's a lot of ugliness publicly right now with signs, or literal signs, but finger pointing in both directions. We know the police union is seeking a 13% raise. And when I say that, they're seeking that, like, 2022, we should have gotten a 4% raise.
They add them up.
And the city is proposing a 9% raise. Okay, you can meet in the middle on 11, but it's more complicated than that.
Because it's over time, right? As far as, like, it would be this year and then next year. And so instead of a lump sum in the beginning.
Well, that is the rub, because the big thing is the police union wants back pay on all those raises.
That's
instead of just
number.
A big thing going forward. And the problem with back pay for the city is that they would owe this massive amount, millions of dollars, overnight.
Yeah, that's the challenge here. Sort of related, but I was listening to a lot of the conversation on our station, other stations, about Act 12 says you have to have 65 new officers each training thing.
So that's the max the police academy can do. The city has to get within 10 years to 1725 sworn officers.
Okay, so apparently the challenge is they're not getting the enrollments they used to have.
Right, yeah. The city has money to hire more officers, and they now can't find qualified people to fill those jobs. And consequently, all the surge in police funding in the 90s, well, all those people now are ready to retire.
So the question part of this is, that's one way to get police officers. The other way is to get police officers that are already working in other departments and bring them in. Has there been conversation about that? Incentives? I know there's some incentives that are out there.
Yes. I think from just Milwaukee's perspective, they've tried that. They got, I think, 10 in the latest class. This police recruiting thing isn't unique to Milwaukee, and that's eventually going to be a zero-sum game that the state has to deal with then if Milwaukee's poaching Oak Creek and Greenfield's poaching Milwaukee. Like, that will not work out to actually create more police officers.
So as far as arbitration started, as you said, this is now you make your case, and then whatever the arbiter comes up with, that is the final say.
Yeah, and as the one for baseball fans out there that are familiar with baseball contract arbitration, there's just a winner. The arbitrator picks one of the sides.
So they don't come up with a new negotiated deal.
Well, in baseball, they pick just one of the offers. In this case, the arbitrator can pick a middle ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there is state law that specifies, like, weighing factors like the city's fiscal health and the different, it gets complicated, and that's why there's attorneys involved. But the arbitrator is empowered to meld the two deals together. I've been told that doesn't happen a lot, though.
Interesting.
Sort of related before we go to break again. Somebody made this point to me. Act 12 sort of, in some ways, rescued the county and the city temporarily with their budget and their issues. Is that a fair way assessment? Because they seem to be now back into the sort of similar station they were pre-Act 12. Yeah, is that proper?
It eliminated the cliff, but they're still...
Running towards it?
there's no more cliff. There's just a really slow death if you need to make cuts and really, really finessing your budget. And when we talk more about the budget, we can talk more about that.
I'd love to hear someone analyze, because when I was listening to folks way smarter than me talk about this, you know, the pending fiscal cliff 5 years ago, they always had this 10-year window where it was going to be really painful. And I thought Act 12 would sort of massage that. At some point, when some of those older people are out of the system, especially for pensions, all that stuff, it does get better, but we have to get to that point. Is there a conversation about that stuff?
Well, let's think about someone like Steve. Hypothetically, Steve's a police officer. He's about to retire. That pension, you're still going to be drawing on that for hopefully 30 years from now.
Yeah.
So that, like, we've eliminated the fiscal cliff.
But the raw numbers of when there used to be a lot more public employees and now there's sort of a lot less, that should alleviate some of those, you know, the budget issues.
Yeah, very slowly over time. And this is one of the things that's now become a problem for the city, is their estimates were off just by a little, but it's millions of dollars. That, yeah, the problem will eventually get better, but it's at the moment still going against them.
Yeah, we still got to get there. All right, after the break with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great reporting and the reporting of others. The mayor's budgets, since we're talking about budget, new library and wheel tax, always a hot button talk radio conversation. We'll get into that with Jeremy Ginny after this on 620 WTMJ. Point taken. Everybody wants to be closer. Jeremy Janine joins us with us every Thursday in the 11 o'clock hour. Urban Milwaukee at UrbanMilwaukee.com. Where's that tchotchke shop you guys got?
Milwaukee and Wisconsin Gifts, 755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee and Mason, Kitty Corner Hotel Metro.
All things Milwaukee. It's kind of a cool place,
too. Get the Utter shot glass.
The Utter shot glass.
I'm not a shot glass guy.
Well, we got snow gloves for 30
years. I don't need
them. You're not a big shot guy?
No. Mm. I never drink shots, actually.
If I bought you a shot, would you take it?
No.
Would you pretend to take it and throw it on the floor?
No, I would probably take it, pour it in a glass with ice, and then have them put a mixer in there. That's what I would do with it. Yeah. So sort of, I guess. All right. The mayor's budget. Where do you want to start with this thing? What is it? What's the big number?
$2.066 billion.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's bigger.
Better?
It's more challenging every year. And that also includes Milwaukee Water Works, which is this huge amount of money that city officials can't really touch, but it's bundled in there.
All right, so what's the meat and potatoes?
Yeah.
The headline, I think if you're just looking for a quick summary, is fees and property taxes are going to go up a little. Some services are going to be cut a little.
Like, give us an example.
Library hours. Right now there's 3 libraries that are open on Sunday. 70% of the people that go to the library on Sunday go to Central Library, so only Central Library, on the mayor's proposal, would be open on Sunday.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And Sunday library hours were a relatively new thing. They existed years ago, but the council brought them back kind of when Act 12 brought the sales tax revenue in. And the mayor was like, no, we know it's going to be tight, so we might have to take this away. He vetoed it, but it ended up getting passed, and now he's back here having to cut it.
And what about the increase in property taxes?
Yeah, so it's 3% roughly. That gets a bit confusing because that also new buildings also kind of pay for some of that 3%, so don't bank on your personal property tax. Yeah. You're going to go up 3%. Your assessment obviously factors into that. Your fees, though, will go up 4%, which is snow and ice removal. There's the street lighting fee. There's a whole series of fees, and it totals about the average house in Milwaukee, about $500. The desire for the city with fees, of course, is that property tax exempt properties, churches, healthcare clinics, that kind of thing, they pay those fees. So it defers it over or spreads it over a wider base.
Not that I'm ever a fan of fees, but I was thinking about this the other day because I drive through Milwaukee a lot and I see garbage all over the place. And I'm thinking, what if they had like a dollar or two fee on your property tax bill that was for a paid force that went out and picked up all these streets and all this garbage that people throw out of their cars? I thought that would make so much sense.
I think Russell Stamper in particular would love that idea because he was trying to fund a couple of years ago like a cleanup force.
Yeah, a little something, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I think people would just my opinion. I don't live in Milwaukee, but I work here, and I hate to see it. Some areas do really well, some don't.
Yes.
And I have been paying, you know, we were talking a lot about those medians, and I have been paying close attention. The ones that I've looked at have been pretty clean, so I'm going to give them props.
You're taking it back?
I'm not taking it back, because I've seen some nasty ones, too. But they are doing it. It seems like they're doing, maybe because I was talking about it, they did a better job. You think I had that kind
of? They did it overnight. They did it in the last week. They're like, oh, we better go clean up that landscaping on the medians
because graffiti said something. Yeah. Not too far out of the imagination. Wheel tax.
Yeah. So
come on,
people think wheel tax. Oh, that's going to cost me a ton. So that must bring in a lot of
money.
Nobody
likes wheel tax.
Yeah. The state law allows cities and counties to charge whatever they want. Milwaukee actually isn't the highest in the state, but it would increase the fee from $30 to $40. Now, that's just the city share. You also pay the county share if you live in Milwaukee, which is $30, and then you pay state fees if you have a hybrid. That's another, like, $75.
Yeah, I found that out. God.
That was new, though, wasn't it?
No, that's a Scott Walker budget compromise from almost a decade ago. But
what was the newer thing on hybrids that was from this last year that...
You get the
it was something with the gas tax because they're using less gas. I don't know.
Well, we'll impact that in
anyways,
the future episode.
Yes.
But the city of Milwaukee wheel tax would go from $30 to $40. It would make it the highest in the state, but it'd be tied with seven other cities, including Madison, Janesville, the small city of Evansville. Like, there's a pretty big gamut. You have to use that money on transportation. So Milwaukee would use it to pave more roads. The budget does include the greatest amount of money ever spent on paving projects in city history. Now, inflation obviously makes it tough to do apples to apples. But the big thing about the wheel tax, you think raising it $10 brings in all this money? No, $2.75 million. City has a $100 million structural deficit it needs to close. Mm. So that's not a lot of money.
So what's the plan to close that?
So the way they get to the $100 million figure is they go, okay, what do we need to fund our pension fully that state law requires? And also, if we wanted to do the exact same thing next year, what did that cost? So if everyone gets a raise, the cost of your government goes up. So they cut library hours. They're going to cut some excess DPW positions. They're not going to lay anyone off, but it'll just be as people kind of cycle out of jobs, they won't fill them again. One of the impacts of that will be, okay, if there's a big snowstorm, your garbage is more likely to be delayed than it was before because there'll just be fewer people.
All right, this is a opinion question. And I know you're a journalist, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So when you gather information about city budgets, or really any story in Milwaukee, on the city council, who's the person you would talk to first on the city council about budget questions? Where do you go?
Depends on what I'm trying to learn. Marina Dmitrievich as chair of the finance committee. She has huge sway. Jose Perez has a big opinion on lots of things, but Marina is the person that seems to be in the details, actually making these what they call the omnibus amendment happen. One of the key things to know about the city budget, we talked about, it's $2 billion. But at the end of the day, the council's decisions that they'll make over the next couple of months are really only going to impact like $5 million worth of stuff. A couple hundred thousand dollars for library hours, small tweaks like that. They might borrow more to repave more streets, things around the edges.
I listened to some of the street takeover stuff, the conversation with like from Marina Dmitrievich and others, and it's interesting how they all look at it. She framed it like a protest angle, which I thought was sort of interesting.
Well, we unpacked that a bit with the ticketing the spectators, that there's a real concern among certain council members that, well, we're going to be using this ordinance on protesters. Alex Brower, actually, who you'd expect to be the most defensive of protesters, was like, well, if that happens, we're just going to revoke the ordinance. I'm not concerned about that. We'll just do it.
I should have went with my slime idea. I tell you.
Gosh.
Still a hot ticket.
All right, so what happened? We'll close on this. What's the next step of the budget?
There'll be a public hearing where the public can make their voice heard, but then what really happens over the next month, and we'll talk about it a lot, is departments present exactly what they're going to be doing with their budget. That's where we'll get a lot more details on what's happening, like a new Capitol Drive library, moving the electrical services building on Menominee Valley, lots of little impactful but big projects.
JJ, Jeremy Janine, happy birthday, 39. Wow, you're getting up there.
It's happening.
All right. Quick break. Well, you're getting more than that. You're getting we'll leave that one alone. All right. Quick break here on Point Taken. All right. We always wind it up on this Thursday with Jeremy Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find your great work and all great reporting. I say this in all seriousness. They're reporting on Milwaukee issues and the county and all that. It's as good as it gets. It's in-depth and thorough, and it's a great resource. And People can subscribe. So urbanwalkie.com is the place to do that. All right. The timber tower that's not rising out of the ground.
Yes. Last week when I was on air in two different commercial breaks, someone kept calling me. So yes. I answered it during one of the breaks and I was, oh, I got a tip for you. This project isn't happening. That appears people have walked off the job site. So I left here and walked over to the site of Neutral Edison, which is on the corner of State and Edison Street, right by the Marcus Performing Arts Center. And sure enough, it was very quiet over there. There was not a construction worker to be found on what's supposed to be an almost $200 million building. It would be the tallest mass timber building in the Western Hemisphere, which actually beats a record Milwaukee currently holds. And it appears at the moment not to be happening. Mm. Now, we got a statement from the developer on what's happening. And they're pausing to value engineer is a difficult but prudent step to safeguard the long-term success of 1005 North Edison. Our focus remains on delivering a resilient, exceptional building for Milwaukee. That's what they're saying, that they blamed it kind of on Trump's and tariffs. Now, all that was known when they broke ground in June, so I don't know how much I'm believing this story that they're selling. If you are value engineering something, you still have to build this seven-story concrete podium, the parking garage that the tower sits on, and they're not doing that, which leads me to believe there's something more going on. C.D. Smith has walked away. They won't comment. They just refer back.
And who's C.D. Smith?
Good question. The general contractor that's building the building for him. Neutral Edison has only completed, or Neutral, a Madison company, has only built one other building before, a mass timber building in Madison. Wasn't nearly this big. They're building this Milwaukee building in a climate where the economics of the couture and 333 water seem like there's not quite as much demand as one might think.
Because this is going to be luxury high-end apartments.
Luxury high-end apartments. Now, they said what I thought was a fairly logical thing, that, you know, those buildings are struggling because there's two that came online at the same time. Ours will come online in 2028. The market will have refilled itself by then. There'll be demand. But here we are with something interesting happened that I really haven't seen happen before, where the project just died in the middle of construction, that there's this very expensive hole in the ground.
So if... Obviously, you're not in the business of publishing speculation, but as far as thinking and not taking their statement at face value, do you think like financing fell through, or just like what else could it be?
I think it's very likely that they realize they don't have the money to complete the project, and it's very unusual that they realize that once construction started and not before construction started.
Unrelated, but since you have a birthday, someone asked if you ever made the Milwaukee Business Journal 40 under 40.
No, and very few other journalists have made their publications.
Well, this would be your last chance, right? So,
also because they're not necessarily in the business of highlighting people who are competitors, right? Because you compete with Milwaukee Business Journal for stories.
All right, stop yakking. We got to get to local news and the latest from ABC. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi, and we were talking to birthday boy, Jeremy Janine. All right.
Northridge.
Northridge. Yes, this is where we're going next.
Northridge Mall is no more. There's still a Menards store out there, but there's nothing else. It is a big hole in the ground, and that's actually a big challenge in its own right to level it.
So all the conversation was, when are we getting this down? Now what is all the conversation?
Now the conversation is the Department of City Development says we're going to have the land for sale in early 2026, but what they don't have at the moment is a public plan for a master plan for what they want to see happen there. And that, I think, will be the big thing of what requirements are there when they sell this land? Is there a minimum jobs per acre that eliminates a lot of uses? Are they banning gas stations? Things like that.
As a mayor who's known for development, this is where it gets really challenging. One, you have to listen to your residents and constituents, but you also have to listen to the developer, because they will tell you what they can actually do on the property. You can have all these grand ideas, but you actually have somebody that has to want to build what you're talking about. So that sort of that discussion conversation in the next year or so is the most important piece of this. What makes sense? What can we do? Who wants to build this?
So no public plan yet, but talks I'm of sure suggestions.
I mean, the department
that you've heard.
Kind of a mix of uses. It's a huge site. It's almost 60 acres. And the one thing that seems to not be happening here is they're not looking for a home run, not something all at once, not a massive corporate headquarters, but a lot of little things together adding up to something bigger than that.
Not just a data center?
Well, maybe there's a small data center to come. They're actually the data centers of the 1980s and 1990s. One of the office buildings right there has this interior data center, which is ironically, a challenge in its redevelopment, that it has this black hole in the middle of this office building.
Is it one of the biggest parcels, or will it be one of the biggest parcels that are available for development in the city? I'm trying to think what else is out there.
Yeah, I would think it's got to be
the biggest.
It's
got to rival it. Yeah.
And if it's not, it's some far less desirable site that's nearby out there. Because that's really the only area in the city where you see more than, say, 10 acres available.
And here's another thing I would encourage, and this may surprise some people, when you're developing a 60 acres, because I think Drexel Town Square was 65, and you can, it might be 80, I don't remember the numbers anymore, but it's a big property. Think about an ability to capture those folks who don't really like development with some green space ideas that are unique and sort of innovative. That's what worked at Drexel Town Square, the beautiful walking park with the natural treatment of rainwater. People love that. You bring that group in, you can get a focus that you didn't have before.
Is there any conversation around housing, or is it absolutely going to be a commercial space?
No, I would assume housing ends up being part of the
mix. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we keep saying that we need more affordable housing, right?
Yeah, in many respects, Drexel Town Square is a good example to look at there. It's a pretty big variety of mixes there. The one challenge, Oak Creek had this big opportunity, and they had a mayor who I'm sure can talk a lot about this. But they had a new library there. There's a new city hall there. The city doesn't have a need for those buildings in that area at the moment.
You have to put the right pieces in. That's where this conversation in the next year and a half, 2 years is really important. What does that look like for that development, that piece? It's a great piece of land if you sort of make it look amazing when you're done. And that's a huge, huge story. I'm happy it's gone, and I know who's really happy, Aaron Lipsky. Because he always talked about how much of an eyesore and hazard
and
that place was. So I'm sure he's applauding maybe loudly today that this thing is down. Other updates. I know we have something on people spending their campaign accounts in an interesting way.
So we have an article on County Board Chair Marcelia Nicholson that no one is accusing her of anything illegal, but she is certainly a big spender of her campaign funds. And the reason we report on this in Urban Milwaukee is just people have a right to know. It's public record of how you're spending this money. It's money you might have donated to her campaign. She's travels a lot. Part of that is just part of her job. She's a high-profile local leader that connects with those other leaders at conferences. But there are things like Thief Wine Bar and a $70 tab. And Graham Kilmer broke all that down for Urban Milwaukee in a controversial article that you can see in the comments there. Some people are not happy with the reporting.
And because also she's run unopposed multiple times, right?
Yeah, so that's a question of – I look at like Michael –
I mean, if you donate to her campaign, you donate to her campaign, and she has campaign – money, but just as far as she doesn't necessarily have to use that money on ads or any kind of actual campaigning because she's
right.
Challenged.
So in the city of Milwaukee, we saw someone like Alderman Michael Murphy in that situation, and he, by the time he retired, had a war chest of over $100,000, and you'd open up his campaign report, and the only thing you saw was interest being accumulated on the money. Yeah. Now you have, and this is where Graham gets, Marcelia Nicholson is really an outlier here, is that she's really spending this money. She takes in a lot.
It is a weird thing where you gather all these funds and you have no opponents, so you have zero reason to spend any money, but then they find ways to spend it that are legal, not illegal, but it's as you said, bad form, right?
And one of the things when you are the leader of a legislative body, sometimes you're spending money to kind of bring up those people behind you to keep your political base intact. And Graham didn't analyze it for that, but I'm sure if you looked closely, you'd find, I spent money at this fundraiser because it helped back this person who then in turn supports me being the board chair.
Someone smarter than me, is alcohol an allowable expense on a campaign?
There are some questions about the far edges, and it even if it's not allowable, it's not like she has done something criminal where maybe she has to pay a $7 refund at some point.
It's notable because I would say she has higher aspirations than her current position, and so I don't think she is a name that is, we're going to see her run for other things, higher office, right?
Yes. And one of the things that interested me in kind of our newsroom discussion about it was she's also working with Nation Consulting, who's working with David Crowley, the county executive, who's now running, obviously, for governor. But his campaign reports look very different than hers in terms of spending. So even when they're working with the same campaign consultants, very different tact being chosen.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Lots more news, some of it breaking, I guess, from his great publication. You can find it at UrbanMilwaukee.com. Point taken, 620 WTMJ, back after this. It is Thursday. This week is flying by.
This month has flown by.
I'll be gone before you know it.
I know, and then October will fly by.
I only got a week.
You're gone.
Week after tomorrow, 4 days. Yeah, be in Sicily.
Jeremy got it.
Yeah, whatever. happy birthday, whatever. All right, so this is a famous name in Milwaukee taverns. Cactus Club.
Yeah, a music venue in Bayview, East Russell, near Superior Street. Wentworth, actually, is the cross street.
The big towers are right over there, the big Bayview towers, right?
Yes, as my daughter calls it, base, and she has all kinds of fantastical ideas about what happens inside there.
I know people that live in those.
Yeah, mostly it's a bunch of older people living in condos.
Come on now.
People with wisdom living there.
There you go. Thank you.
Cactus Club, which is probably a thorn in their side because it's a rock music venue just down the block.
Yeah.
Kelsey Kaufman bought it in 2019 or 2020, and she has had a great focus on making it an inclusive venue for all. And part of that means accessibility. Now, unfortunately, she bought a building that she learned is 3.5 feet off the sidewalk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's up.
So that is higher than most buildings. It's got quite the set of stairs in front of it. She decided she was going to build a ramp. It was important to her that the ramp came to the front door. She could have built it much cheaper to go in the back.
Yeah.
Then she learned, okay, it's going to be expensive. I want it to be concrete so it lasts. Let's make it more expensive so we can actually get a grant in the end. And she put art on it. And so she had artist Katie Klangbeil design a piece in the Ruth Foundation for the Arts, chipped in for that. But all told, it was a 6-figure investment that she made voluntarily. Just over $100,000 she spent. And part of that 6 figures was permitting fees from the city. Alderwoman Marina Dmitrievich, who actually lives nearby, said, hey, we want to incentivize this. We don't want to penalize this. Mm-hmm. So what Dmitrievich and Kaufman and then Rebecca Rabatin with Independence First, who's a former city employee, they went through kind of what are these permit fees? Could they be waived? And it turns out, yes, they can, that the city has now passed a policy as of Tuesday to strike these fees. So if you make this investment, and again, you don't have to make a $100,000 investment, maybe you're spending $5,000 on a rear ramp, you now won't have to pay city permitting fees.
So like, basically like paying it forward as making it, not disincentivizing people to making their places more accessible.
Yes.
Like one of the rare times I agreed with Alderwoman Marina Dmitrievich.
Look at that.
Good job. Well done. I love that.
But there's also a different part of this story this is great. And separately, this also made news as she was trying to fundraise for this because Jack White donated, right?
Yeah. So one of the things the city didn't resolve was kind of its requirements that it tacks onto these projects. Kelsey wanted to put the ramp in the front. And because that consumes some sidewalk space, the city said, well, we want a curb bump out to maintain the sidewalk space there. So that's extending kind of the sidewalk to the edge of the parking lot.
The city loves bump outs. So why is that? Yeah. Well, is that our new thing now?
The surprise was that Kelsey had to pay for it.
Oh.
The questions about ethics on whether you should force someone to pay for that. But Jack White, the White Stripes co-founder, did a really generous thing. He performed a show there to raise money. And that raised like $33,000, which includes $20,000 out of his own pocket.
That's cool.
Wow.
Hey, that's paying it forward.
So is this done now?
That's my question. Is it finished?
So you can, October 4th, you have to go to my article or Cactus Club website to confirm this, is the Beat Street Festival. The railing will be installed by then. Mm. You can go see it yourself. You can have a great time at the Beat Street Festival.
Lots happening in Bayview.
My wife's promised she's winning the pie contest this year. She got third before.
Does that include eating a pie quickly as possible? Is it like the
making a pie?
Making a pie. That's less fun.
It's not about excessive consumption. It's about actually practicing baking skills. What kind of pie did she make?
I don't remember. It was 2 years ago, so I don't remember at that point.
You might want to take interest in what your wife's doing. That's just my advice to you. Somebody who's been married 40 years last Sunday. All right. Jerry Maggini, we'll stick around for closing arguments and segments. And she's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken. All right, winding it up to the top of the hour news on WTMJ. Point taken, Kristen Bry and Steve Scafidi here on this Thursday. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com joining us. All right, another hotel in the news, Iron Horse Hotel.
Iron Horse Hotel, yes. The lawsuit that kind of has left that hotel under uncertain future since 2021, a foreclosure lawsuit, has resolved itself. Its lender, which is an affiliate of Rialto Capital, a Miami company, bought the building at a sheriff's sale. It was valued at $15 million. It had about $28 million in debt. So obviously that lender is still taking a bath on the whole transaction. But Tim Dixon is now out of the Iron Horse. There is a new owner. I would guess they'll probably sell it again at some point. I don't know if they'll rush to do that. But the hotel continues to operate near the Harley-Davidson Museum. Continues to be one of the city's premier, especially boutique hotels. But it has struggled as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic.
So I guess So they bought it, and you think they're going to sell it. It's like, what do they do to increase the value that it's worth buying in the first place?
So they didn't really buy it as much as they just wrote down their mortgage because they foreclosed on it. So they essentially took a $13 million haircut, if I'm doing my math in my head correctly. and they will try to recoup some of that at some point, likely by selling it, because it's part of this asset pool. The way a lot of mortgages end up working are home mortgages, but hotels end up the same way, where all these investors just pour their money in and they buy all kinds of different properties and bundle them together.
Got it.
All right. So what have you been covering in the week ahead?
When I'm still chasing down this parking story, how the city of Milwaukee treats habitual parking offenders. They're going to get a bit more generous. They're going to give you more notice that they're going to tow your car even after you've racked up more than four parking tickets. A couple other things coming out.
They should look at public humiliation. That might be a more stricter
policy. Yeah. The suckades.
Yeah. We made something different.
Also on my list, traffic calming data, a lot more data just came out on that. We have a number of stories that'll run on Urban Milwaukee about suspensions handed down to bars for everything from leaving your semi-automatic weapon on the register and having a customer steal it to underage drinking and the normal things you get a bar suspended for.
Here's an observation. So on Michigan here, they're doing putting these concrete things in traffic calming measures, right?
Yep.
So you lose all the parking on that street because there's no room to park there now, right?
So on Michigan, if I'm trying to remember, you lose the parking on one side. They're putting in protected bike lanes, which is the big change, and a median. And so they kind of just push everything over so that one side ends up with parking.
And I would say, because I was watching this, I took my wife to Capitol Grill for our anniversary, and we were walking along Wisconsin Avenue here, and they do a really good job with enforcing the parking on the main street. So that's where you could actually capture revenue. If people are just putting their car there and just leaving it there, you do this, Chris. You just park and you don't care what the time says.
Not here.
Yeah, but you do that a lot, right? You take your you take your shots.
There's a place in Milwaukee.
That's why I brought it up.
That does not. I in my experience does not enforce parking.
Oh, why don't you tell us where it is?
Very well. So, and because of the amount of time I have to park there, the two times I've ever gotten a parking ticket at $25, it evens out.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. She's a parking meter evader is what she is.
So calling back to our $100 million city budget structural deficit.
Kristen Bry, part of the problem.
Yeah, really.
Not
just
part
like,
of the
it's
solution.
Just like not paying the bus fare.
Yeah.
One of the things that happened since last year, the city anticipated fully staffing their parking checkers, which would result in more parking tickets being issued. That didn't really happen. The city's top parking official actually is no longer employed by the city of Milwaukee, and they're going to be gunning for more parking tickets this year because they know there's violators out there.
I'm not saying they shouldn't. But that's what I'm not going to be mad once they start kicking it up. But I think as of right now, there's pockets where they're pretty good, and there's pockets where I never see any parking.
All right. Send your emails. Your angry emails. No. All right. Jeremy, we'll do it again next week. Kristen, Steve, Point Taken News is next.